Two normal people get married. They don't want to hurt anybody. They just love each other. They move into the relationship so excited about life. Then one gets larger than the other and they have a baby. And when this occurs, you think, well, the baby's going to draw us together, and it does, in the middle of the night and during other crises. And you come together and you feel like, wow, I mean, we're parents. Never had a course on it. Not a certificate that has been given, and you may have majored in engineering, or most of you majored in real estate, or whatever. Did they study that in school? Well, anyway, yeah, most of you are there. And you're not sure exactly what to do. On one side of the mouth, you're an expert. Out of the other side of the mouth, you're desperate for anything that will work. Anything. A new weapon. Anything. We're experts out of one side of the mouth. You go to a party, and one of the kids acts up there at the party, one of the host kids, and they deal with it in some fashion. You get outside, and as soon as you get in your car, and you know that the car door has been shut, what do you say? Did you see how they handled that kid? Hmm? Can you believe what they did in there? If that kid were mine, I'll tell you what I'd do. Hmm? Experts. Especially with other people's children. We know how they ought to be handled. Out of the other side of the mouth, we're looking for anything at all that will work. Anything. It doesn't make any difference. A new pill, anything, a formula. Give me 10 steps and I'll use them this week. Right now. I notice when I do parenting seminars around the country that people come, and I know that the kids are at home scared to death what the parents are learning. Because the last time they got it, they went home with a new regime, you know. One man this week, a CPA that came along with the dentist, he said, I spanked my child for the first time this week. First time in the kid's life, I spanked him. And he said, the kid came up to him about an hour later and said, I really did something stupid, didn't I, Dad? He said, yep. He said, that's why you spanked me, isn't it? Yep, that's why I did. I mean, he had a new regime already. Hadn't gotten to this point yet. He'd already gone after him with a weapon. We're looking at anything that will work. Expert and yet desperate. In Proverbs chapter 22, if you'll turn with me there, Proverbs 22, you get what I think is the basis for parenting, which gives us a basic philosophy of parenting out of the Bible. We're going to deal with two main passages today, and I'll be referring to a third. Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6. It's a very familiar passage and yet very misunderstood. It says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. This has been misused in every form possible. The Baptarians have used it to say, if you train up a child to be a Baptarian, when he's old, he will still be a Baptarian. It has nothing to do with that. Train up a child in the way he should go, when he's old, he will not depart from it. There are three phrases, there are three words I want to pull out of there. One is the way. The way. The idea of the way is a bow that is bent to launch an arrow. And the idea is it's a natural bent. It's a natural bent, a natural inclination. The makeup of the child, the way he should go, it's his strengths and his weaknesses and the combination of the two. It's a bow that is bent to launch an arrow. Train up a child according to his natural bent. Not according to his sin nature, that's not what it's talking about. But according to his strengths and his weaknesses, his makeup, what he's all about, his uniquenesses. Train up a child according to the natural bent that God created in the first place for this child. Some children like to work with little tiny things, and they can sew, and they can do all kinds of little tiny things. Other kids just get frustrated with it. That's a natural bent. Some of you like to make decisions, and so you take weeks to make decisions. You love doing that. You're analysts, and you're a decision maker, and you just work hard. I mean, you really labor over making decisions. You really don't like it, but you act like you like it because you do it so often. Others just make it like now. Some, when you get ready to buy something, it will take you a year, and by then the inflation has got you, so you can't buy it. Others are impulsive, and you just go do it right now. Right now, you got the deal. Especially if you look back 5 years ago, hey, I really got a deal. Look at it, how much it is now. We're so different according to our natural bent, according to our makeup that we have. Train up a child according to his natural bent, the way he should go. This phrase, should go, is showing that God is involved in the process. It's talking about God's intention in the first place. Train up a child according to the makeup that God has created in this child and the intention that God had for him in the first place. In other words, God has an intention for every child to do something, to be someone, to cultivate that something, that uniqueness that they have. He has an intention for every child. In other words, parenting is not according to the natural bent of the parent. It's according to the natural bent of the child and what God has created inside the child. We're to find it, discover it, and to be cultivating and launching and moving our child toward that end. Every child has uniqueness, says, that no one else has. I love Mr. Rogers. I think he is super. Turns me off in some ways, but the content, I like it. I never will forget the first time I ever saw Mr. Rogers. My two kids were sitting right there in front of the television holding their nose, just moving around their nose. And he said, now feel your nose. And they're feeling their noses, you know. And now feel your brother's or sister's nose. And they're feeling one another's nose, you know, and they're hitting them like that. He said, do you know that you have the only nose like that in the world? And they're sitting there saying, that's right. He got them turned on about their nose right there in the front of the TV set. Train up a child according to their natural bent, their natural makeup, the God-given makeup, the God-given intention of what they ought to be, the uniqueness of that person. That's what's so beautiful about people. They're so unique. There's nothing like any other person. It's one footprint, that's it. Very, very unique. Train up is the third phrase I want to deal with just quickly. This is all in the introduction. It's all free here so far, all right? Train up has three aspects to it. One is to dedicate your child toward this natural bent, to dedicate him that way. Secondly, to instruct him in that way. And thirdly, is to motivate him in that way. The third one is the toughest, obviously. We can all dedicate them. We can preach to them often, legislate. We can do a lot of things like that. It's to motivate them so it's an internalization toward that fulfillment of the natural bent. Train up, motivate, instruct, dedicate your child according to the way, the natural bent that God created in the first place that he ought to go. In other words, you do not put a box around your child and say, you will be a doctor, or let's move him into really high stuff and make him a minister or something like that. Huh? You discover what your child's all about, and you start right from the beginning. You can tell it right from the beginning, and you talk about it, and you keep instructing them, and you keep talking about them. You say, you know, you may have a weakness in being distracted by the television, so don't get near the television when you're trying to do your homework. You may have a strength here where you are so strong in following through and going after it, and you want to deal with those things and help them understand who they are, discovering what they can do and what God has intended, and help launching them into the world. That's what this verse is all about. You know why? Because every child is different. And you know your child better than I know your child. That's why if you hear anybody tell you 10 ways or 12 ways to discipline your child when he goes berserk in the supermarket, hang it up. Because that person doesn't know your child. There are certain principles in the Bible whereby we must make decisions. But once you understand those principles of how to discipline, you'll see that there are many principles that give us guidelines, but you've got to make the decision what you're going to do with your child. Some children, you look at them, just kind of firm, and they'll die in a pile right there in the fruit department. Isn't that right? Others, you have to pull out a big weapon and just show it to them. That's all. Just show it to them, and they move right in line. Others, you think you'll never get their attention, ever. No matter what you use, revolver, butcher knife, anything. Every child is so different. Some you just need to speak to. But every child is so different. There are principles, but you must make the decision. That's what I love about what God has created. He's created us to be creative with our own children. And to be discovering and be students of our children to find out what is that natural bent? What is the intention here that God has put together? What creation I have here to launch into this world? Also turn with me to Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4. It's referring to parents, but it also has a collective value to, it's actually referring to fathers, but it's a collective value to parents. And fathers, Ephesians 6:4, and fathers, do not provoke or stir up your children to anger. The greatest problem we have today in our world with people is that people are building up anger. And one of the primary reasons why people build up anger, such great anger inside their pressure cooker, is because of a bad relationship or a non-relationship, primarily with the same-sex parent. Anger is stirred up by parents, and parents continue to provoke their children to anger by misapplying two things. And he goes on to say that. Don't provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord, as it says in this translation. Bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. The word discipline is talking about instructing your child, developing a relationship with them in the process. It's heavy on the word relationship. Instructing them by relationship. The second word, instruction of the Lord, or admonition, as some people have it. Sometimes it's nurture and admonition of the Lord. The second word, their instruction or admonition, is talking about giving them a sense of responsibility and actually disciplining them with responsibility. Two key words in parenting. Don't provoke your children to anger, but bring them up by giving them a relationship with you, primarily. Connect them, interconnect them with you. And secondly, making them responsible people. Relationship and responsibility, those are the key words in parenting. All of those plug right back into the biblical game plan, the biblical foundation of God's Word. Relationship and responsibility. If you can pull off those two and continue to go back to those two things, those two ingredients, you will not provoke your children to that kind of anger they're talking about here, and you will launch them into the world by discovering what they're all about through relating to them, through moving them toward responsibility according to the reality of the Word of God. You see, life is a series of responsibilities lived out in the context of relationships. Life is a series of responsibilities lived out in the context of relationships, and it must be based upon the reality of the Word of God. I added a third ingredient all of a sudden. We've got relationship, responsibility, and reality. It's in a very good book that I read not long ago. And I wrote it, too. Life is a series of responsibilities lived out in the context of relationships. An interesting thing is you can do all kinds of things for your children. You can learn all the latest discipline techniques, and you can find all kinds of interesting ways to deal with your children. But the problem is we don't really do a whole lot until we balance relationship and responsibility. Relationship and responsibility. Until we learn that kind of balance, we're not able to launch our children properly. There are many, many studies on parenting styles. I want to give you a little bit of this before we get into the relationship itself. We're still in the introduction, so hang in there with me. In the one study, there are four parenting styles. One is neglectful, where there's no relationship and no responsibility. Neglectful. The second is authoritarian, where there's heavy responsibility and control of the child, but no relationship, no support. The third is permissive, where there's high relationship, high support of the child, but no responsibility, no control of the child. And the fourth is authoritative, which is a balance of the relationship and responsibility, or support of the child and control of the child. When these were tested, and they've been tested in three different centers around the country, one of them was a Christian center, the other two were not. And every one of them came out this way. When they were tested for which parenting style produces the highest self-esteem, they came in like this. Authoritative was number one. Authoritative was number one. A balance of relationship and responsibility. They didn't even have to make the study. They could have read Ephesians 6:4. Very simple verse. Been there for a long time. Written in the first century. Isn't that incredible? I often have more fun reading psychological studies because so many of them could have read a good book here a long time ago and saved millions of dollars. But it's kind of fun to have statistics anyway, and so I like to throw them in anyway. So it's here. The best parenting style for producing a high self-esteem is relationship and responsibility. Number two came in was permissive. Third was authoritarian, high responsibility, low relationship. And fourth was neglectful for self-esteem. The second study that they did was on conforming to authority. The capacity to conform to authority, like to parents, to teachers, to police people, this sort of thing. And so here's how it came in. The best was authoritative, the balance of the relationship and responsibility, the two key ingredients of Ephesians 6:4. Number two was, permissive. Capacity to conform to authority. Permissive parenting style was the second best. The third was neglectful. The neglectful parenting style was number three as far as moving kids towards capacity to conforming to authority. The fourth was authoritarian. You can begin to see that a little bit, because when you have an authoritarian lifestyle or parenting style, you're always giving them a responsibility without a relationship, then they react to that. The third study was in a tendency to embrace the convictions of the parents. The tendency for the children to embrace the convictions of the parents. The values, the morals, the ethics. Here's the way they came in. The best was authoritative. The balance of relationship and responsibility. The second was permissive. The third was neglectful. And the fourth was authoritarian. Are you beginning to get a picture? A relationship with your child is more important than getting them to do the right things. Because until you have a relationship with your child, it doesn't really make any difference what they do when you're around them. You know, it's like the revolver method. They'll do anything you want them to do with a revolver in your hand. They do it quickly. But until you have a relationship with your child, you really forfeit the right of directing their lives in the first place. The fourth study was identification with the counterculture. Which one of these parenting styles would give would help them to identify with the counterculture? This is not good, so it's not good to come in first on this one, all right? The tie was for first, neglectful and authoritarian. Neglectful and authoritarian. Responsibility without relationship. Making them toe the line, but no relationship. The next came in with permissive, and final, which was the best way to go, was authoritative. Parents, don't provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Bring them up in the discipline, the relationship type of instruction, and instruction, the responsibility type instruction, disciplining them in the Lord, in the reality of the Word of God. Life is a series of responsibilities lived out in the context of relationships. Dorothy Briggs, in her book, Your Child's Self-Esteem, outstanding book because it's one of the first books that ever related self-image to relationships, just as the Bible does and has for many years. She puts it this way. A study aimed at pinpointing the difference between happy and unhappy people concluded that the single most impressive difference between the two groups was that happy people were successfully involved with others, the unhappy people were not. This morning, I want to attack an issue that I think is so critical in your interconnection with your children, that if you don't hear this, it doesn't make any difference if you know how to spank well. Because if you don't hear this, it isn't going to make any difference anyway. If you don't understand what we're going to deal with this morning, then you are going to be in deep trouble in your relationships with your children. If you don't have any children, these same ingredients of relationships will help you in relationship to anybody. But primarily, the illustration of parent-child relationships. And we talk about it all the time. You've got to have a relationship with your child, because rules without a relationship push the rebellion button every time. You've heard it for years. What's a relationship? This morning, I want to give you seven elements of a relationship, of how you relate to your child, and then how you open up a broken relationship. And then we'll close it out. The first ingredient is satisfaction. Satisfaction. Are you satisfied with your child's makeup? Are you satisfied with the unique combination of ingredients that your child happens to have? One lady told me, she said, I'm willing to die for my child, but I don't like him. Very easy to do. Our number one child is a dissolver. Her way of coping with stress is just, yeah, right there. I turned around one day, we're driving along, I turned around and said something to her, and she just died in a pile right there in the back seat. I looked at Carol and said, what'd I do? I wasn't even upset. This is over. Our second child came into the world competing, as number two children many times do. And we didn't know we had her attention for a long time, about 3 years. Our number three child, you plug him in the morning and you pull the plug as fast as you can in the evening. But he's just straight on, all the time, on. All very different. You satisfied with that? You had all the A's. Remember that? Remember how you were in the honor society and the legend gets greater as we go along. We can't find the grade cards because they were destroyed in the flood, but other than that, they're up in the attic somewhere. We don't know where they are. But trust me, son, I got a bar for the honor society. It's an incredible pin. I hope you get that too.
And your kid makes B's and C's and other such letters, hmm? Are you satisfied with that?
I'm not talking about building a monument to mediocrity. I'm talking about accepting and receiving your child in that natural makeup of who the child is. You were the jock. Oh, I mean, you lettered in every sport that one year. You were captain of the team. Well, of course, everybody was captain that year, but still. You can't find the letters if you got, you can't find the gold bars that went on them, your letter sweater's gone, I don't know, you gave them to some girl, whoever it was, but, I mean, you won the game that one time, remember that? Remember that time you made the shot of what it, hey, Charlie, you tell it well. And your kid can't walk across the room without tripping. Are you satisfied with your child? I'm asking the wrong people, you understand that, don't you? I should be asking the children. Do your children know that you're satisfied with them? With that God-given makeup and uniqueness of who they are you satisfied with them? Do your children know that? I was speaking in Knoxville, that's what they say down there, Knoxville, Tennessee. I was speaking to a group of faculty and their friends on parenting at the University of Tennessee. A faculty man and his wife took me out for lunch and had their little 8 or 9 year old boy in the back with me. We are zooming along to the restaurant, and the mother turns around, which is, happens a lot when you speak on parenting. People want to tell you how they do it right, and I don't even care. I'm just glad that I'm still surviving myself. That's all. I mean, I just hope that I can help. But she turned around and she said, Johnny, you know that your mom and dad are satisfied with you, don't you? Johnny sat there, didn't say a word. She said, Johnny, you know that we're satisfied with you. Nothing. The dad readjusted the mirror up here, and he looked back. He said, son, did you hear your mother? Hmm? You know that we're satisfied with you, don't you? He said not a word. We got to the parking lot, and I realized that they needed to have a family council, so I excused myself. They came in a little bit later, and the mother walked up to me very embarrassed, and she said, you know, he didn't know we were satisfied with him. Are you satisfied with your child? Does your child know that? The second ingredient of a relationship is commitment. Commitment to what your child thinks, his interests, his values, not saying you agree with them, but committed to the fact that he's allowed to have them. A man walked into my office a few years ago and he said, I've got a black sheep in my family. 5 boys, and the 5th one's a black sheep. Can you believe that? I said, I can't believe it. I said, what's happening? He said, he's getting involved in midget racing, just right in the middle of it. He said, it's such a dirty sport. I sensed he was a lot like I was. I said, you mean you aren't mechanically inclined? Is that what you mean? He said, well, that too, but it's a dirty sport. He said, what do I do to relate to my child? I'm losing him. I said, I got one step. It's the only one I know. You got to get involved in midget racing. He said, isn't there another plan? I don't know any other plan. Maybe somebody down the street can tell you something else. I don't know. Only one step. You got to get involved in midget racing. You cannot train up a child in the way he should go if you can't figure out where in the world he's going. You got to go with him. He got out there and got involved in midget racing. 3 months later, the boy sold the midget racer and went into something else his dad didn't like. What he was saying was this, Dad, you made a few points there. You showed me you were committed to me. But I heard you say you didn't like this. Let's try this one out, all right? Let's see how committed you really are. He came in again. What now? Get involved in that. But I don't like, I don't care. Get in it. Third cycle. He sold that particular routine and went into the third one. There is no other plan. Are you committed to your child? Are you committed to his interests, his values, his thinking, his opinions? Do you seek the opinions of your children? Oh, they're just kids. Hey, they're people. Do you seek their opinion? Do you value them? When I was in the third grade,
I was an only child, and my parents decided that we probably ought to move from the farm on to into town, in the big metropolitan area called Blanchester, Ohio. You've not heard of it. And they asked my opinion of what I thought, whether we should sell and buy another house in town or whether we should move or not. I mean, what do I know? I'm in the third grade. Don't know nothing. I didn't know there was any other area than the ranch there. But they asked my opinion. We went and we searched for houses, and they asked my opinion if I liked it or not. Didn't do a thing for buying the house, but did a bunch for me. When I was a junior in high school, my dad sold his business and went to work for someone else, and he was trying to figure out where he would work. He had three options. Took me out of school, which I liked a bunch, and we went and looked at all three of the businesses, and he introduced me to the people. I found out more about what he was going to be doing there, and after we got through with the day, he said, "Where do you think I should jump in?" What do I know? I don't even care. I don't have to be there. But it did something for me. Do you seek the opinions of your children? Your child walks in and says, "Hey, Mom, communism's not so bad after all. I've been thinking about it." And you're the chairperson of the Anti-Communist League of Orange County. Now, what do you do? Well, you can go berserk right there and put that in concrete right now. Or you can draw them out and say, "Really, tell me about it. I'd like to hear what you came up with, you dummy." You see the difference? You seek their opinion and you value it as a valid opinion. It may be absolutely wrong. It may be black versus white. But they've at least allowed to have an opinion, a value, something. And you're never going to pull them across by going berserk, I'll tell you that. Nor by saying there's a verse on that. You've got to get them to come out with that and talk to them and relate to them. Otherwise, you will not find that you have any kind of cross-pollination of what's happening in your ideas. Are you committed to your child? Children like to have that focused encounter, knowing that somebody's listening to them, and it doesn't change as they get older unless you didn't listen to them when they were younger. I've heard people say, "Well, hey, I mean, you don't understand. We have teenagers. I've only counseled a few hundred of them with parents. And you listen to them when they're younger, you can still be listening to them when they're older." Kids love to sit on your lap when they're younger, and they get right down there, nose to nose, eyeball to eyeball. It's intensive. And they talk about everything, and it gets so intense you want to move your head just a little bit, just to get away from the stare. So you move it, and they bring you right back. I mean, it hurts. It's so intensive. And our kids just ramble on and on and on and on. They change subjects and they just talk and talk and talk. A lot like their mother, I think. But you know what's interesting? It's interesting to me that you can go to a counselor, a professional counselor, and pay him a lot of money. And you go to a counselor and he just listens. Doesn't say a thing. He doesn't know schmatz of what to tell you to do. And he's sitting out there just, $2,000 later, and three labels on what your problem happens to be, now you feel better. Why? Because he told you what to do? No, he didn't know schmatz what was going on. He listened to you. There's something therapeutic about listening. The Proverbs say, "Through presumption comes nothing but strife." When you're not listening, you're babbling at the mouth and telling people what you think it ought to be. Listening is therapeutic. Listen to your children. Focused encounter, pulling it out of them, having them talk, telling you about what's going on in their heart. Satisfaction, commitment. The third is transparency. Transparency. Transparency is another word for truthfulness. When you blow it with your children, you need to tell them that you blew it. When you screw up, tell them you did it. Let them in on that. Oh, it's good for them because it's a good example. Certainly it is. Because they're going to blow it too. It's good for them to know you're human too. That's great. But let me tell you the reason why you really must tell your children when you blew it, especially with them. They already know that you blew it. What they want to know is, do you know that you blew it? That's where the credibility gap happens in parent-child relationships. And that, by the way, it happens in any relationship. All these principles are true in every relationship. When you blow it, but you didn't know that you blew it, or they don't think you knew that you did, then they think, my parents are weird. I mean, it looked to me like they absolutely blew it, but they don't act like it. It's like if someone dropped a bottle in the back of the room. All of you would hear the bottle in the back of the room dropping against some chair. If I kept speaking and speaking and speaking and ignored it, I'd lose you for 3 to 5 minutes because you'd worry about me. You'd say, I wonder if he heard the bottle drop in the back of the room. I don't think he heard that bottle. I wonder if he can hear. You begin worrying about it. Some may move into prayer right there saying, the poor guy can't hear. But all I got to say is a bottle just dropped in the back of the room. And you say, okay, he's all right. Let's go back and listen to him, all right? Or in your church, you say, hark, a bottle droppeth in the back of the room. You know, you do. You have to relate. Transparency. I was in Dallas and sitting at International House of Pancakes, which is big time in Dallas, near Dallas Seminary. And I was having a luncheon with three other men. And a man stood up across from the table from me. We were eating with him. He stood up and went after me. He was going to hit me. We were just talking about calm things, just calm things sitting there. And he jumped up and started to hit me. I thought, man alive, what in the world is going on? Made me mad that he stood up and started after me. So I said something to him I should not have said. It takes two to pull the thing off. I felt so bad. Later on I came home. I said to Tammy, who was very, very young, I said, Tammy, I blew it today. You did? Yeah, I said something really bad to this guy. I told her. It's important that you become vulnerable, transparent with your children. Satisfaction, commitment, transparency. Fourth, intimacy. Intimacy is saying you've got to treat each child individually, not so much of the emphasis on the group. Train up a child in the way he should go, not train up the whole tribe in the way they should go. All right, group, line up. Be three swats for each of you. Here we go. Now, if you've got more than two, you've got a group anyway. You're in trouble already. But you have to treat them as a group sometimes. All right, group, get in the bus. But you've got to deal with each child individually to find out the unique makeup of that child, to listen to them. Otherwise, you treat the second one like you did the first one or the third one like you did the first or second. You've got to be listening. Intimacy is learning how to get inside that child and empathize and care and listen what's going on. Also, intimacy is saying that many times we build the fence, the perimeter, the boundary, where no child is allowed to go outside the fenced area. These are the rights and wrongs. And the inside of the fenced area is right. Outside is wrong. And the parents are inside with the child. But you know what most parents do? They go out to the fenced area and police it. Leave the child in the middle. Now, how does the child get the parent's attention? He's got to bust through the fence. Then they have a wonderful conversation. Stay inside the fenced area. Enjoy the relationship. Cultivate the relationship. Don't spend all your time policing the deal. It's almost like parents think that they can keep their children from doing something wrong. You aren't going to be able to do that. Unless you've got some messianic type child there that you think might be growing up to be the second coming or something. He's going to break out. Count on it. But what's going to draw him back? The empty area inside? No. If he's got a relationship with you. I broke out many times out of the barrier, out of that boundary. And I faced a lot of consequences as I went out that boundary. But I always had something to come back to that when my parents were there. We had a relationship together. There was something I could come back to. If you're not developing a relationship, an intimate relationship with your children inside that area, then there's nothing for them to come back to. But believe me, they're going to break out. Five, expectancy. Expectancy. View your child with potential, not as a problem. If you see a child as a problem, you treat them that way. Oh, here he comes. Good night. Give your child a sense of destiny. Give them a sense of destiny. Let them in on this verse, Proverbs 22:6, that God has uniquely launched them and using you as a launching pad to launch them into the world. He's created a natural bent with certain strengths and certain weaknesses to launch them to do something unique and very effective out there in the world. Let them in on that secret. Tell them God's got something special for them. I may have told you this before, but when my father went off to war, my mother was pregnant with me, and he got shot and was in the prison camp, and she thought he was dead, or she'd heard from the government that they thought he was dead. She was convinced he was not dead because she was not about to have a baby, me, without my father around. And my mother is quite strong that way. And so she began to pray, and then she'd write to people and saying, I'm convinced that my husband's alive, he's going to get home before Junior is born. My dad in the prison camp wrote a letter, we have it, where he writes, I wish I could let you know the confidence that I have that I'm going to get home before Junior is born. And he couldn't get the letter out of prison camp. I was a month late. My father came home 1 week on Saturday. I came the next week. I don't know what my mother did to hold me up there, but whatever it was. I've heard all my life, I've heard the same thing from my mother and my father, that God has something special for you because he allowed you to have your father back when everyone thought he was dead. He allowed you to have your father back to help launch you into this world and to help cultivate who you are and what you're all about. You think that doesn't do something for somebody? It made me feel like God's got something for me to do. You know what? He's got something for everybody to do. Everybody is created by God with uniquenesses to be launched into the world. Six, perseverance. This is a good Greek word that means hang in there. Good for parents. Hang in there. This too will pass is another way to say that. Whatever the stage is, this too will pass. Hang in there. Don't keep score. That's the third time you've done that today. That's the fourth time you've done that this week. That's the 114th time you've done that this year so far. Don't keep score. Perseverance. Hang in there. Don't be shocked. Kids like to come home and shock mom. Used to be around junior high. Now it's moving into the elementary ages. They come home and they want to shock mom every night. And when you get shocked, you fan the fire. You make it bigger than it ever was. Mom, I saw some drugs in the hall today. You did what? Yeah, I touched them. Probably didn't get near them. But you fan it when you get shocked. Don't be over-concerned about your reputation over the child's welfare. No kid of mine will ever do that, I'll tell you that right now. No Timmons kid will ever be caught out there. Announce that one in front of your kids. You just set up one of the goals for their life. Also in perseverance, separate the offense from the offender. The Bible always shows us all the way through, one of the greatest pictures I know of separating the offense from the offender. God loves me, and I am an offender. But he does not like or love what I do when I offend him. But he still loves me. What better picture do we have of that? We can separate the offense from the offender. There's a book called Parent Effectiveness Training, probably the most popular book on communication with your children today. And it's founded on one basic premise, or two or three basic premises, that aren't so swift. And this is one of them. He says this. You cannot. It is impossible, he says. It is impossible to separate the offense from the offender. Next paragraph. Even if you could, it would be difficult. No one said it was going to be easy. And so the whole thing is you can't do it. Now, there are great principles in that book of communication, but the foundations of it really stink. You can separate the offense from the offender. That's what love is all about. Tammy came up to me when she was about 2.5, 3 years old, sat on my lap, and she said, Daddy doesn't love Tammy when Tammy's bad, does she? Does he? I said, Tammy, I love you when you're naughty. You do? Tammy, I love you all the time, even when you're naughty. But I don't like what you do when you're naughty. Oh. Sesame Street came on a little bit later and put the witches on the program, and she came back up a few weeks later. She sat on my lap. She said, Daddy, we don't love witches, do we? I said, Tammy, we love witches. She said, we do? I said, certainly, but we don't like what they do. Oh, like that other deal, right? Mm-hmm. You can separate the offense from the offender. You love them always. You always must have a relationship with them. But you may have to discipline them very hard or very strongly or maybe even have them move out of the house. But you still have a relationship. You love the offender, but you don't like the offense. Perseverance. Carol's parents came a few months later to look over the area where we lived at the time, and Tammy yelled out from the back of the car, said, "Grandma, we love witches." Seven. Compassion. Show affection to your children. Many people think you'll make them weird if you touch them. I'll tell you what, you'll make them weird if you don't touch them. The way your children have communicated to them what love is all about and compassion and affection is through touching them. I remember the fondest memories of my whole life are with me sitting in a chair next to my dad or in a pew at church or at a baseball game with my father's arm around me right here, and there was his big hand right there. I never can remember another thing more warm and affectionate to me than that. And whenever we're winning or something, you knock me on the shoulder or whatever. When you say to a child where the parents are going through a divorce, "Do you know your dad and mom really love you? Do you know your dad loves you?" Invariably the child will say, "Yeah, he tickles me. Yeah, he wrestles me. He dunks me in the pool." What are they saying? "I know that my dad loves me because he touches me." Compassion, show affection. Empathize with them, appreciate their feelings. When they're sad, you say, "Oh, you're really sad, aren't you?" "Yeah." They're shocked that you even understand that. "You're disappointed, aren't you?" "Yeah, I really am." "You're tired, aren't you?" "No." One feeling you cannot empathize with. Make a note of that. You see, it's a sense of giving yourself up for your child. You know where I got these seven words? Got them in the Bible, obviously. They're out of 1 Corinthians 13. And there in that love chapter, every one of these are implied there as far as developing a love relationship with your child. You know what I'm asking you? Do you love your child? If I'd have asked that at the beginning, most of you said, "Well, of course." I mean, golly, we're in church, aren't we? Now I ask you, do you love your child? Do you love your child? Does your child know that? Do you love them in this way? What happens if you've already had a broken relationship with your child and you've got to reestablish it? I'd suggest starting with transparency. Start out right where you blow it with your child. "But you don't know my child." Hey, believe me. Start with you. A physicist came to me in Dallas and asked me to check over a plan that they had. They were bringing their child home after she'd been away for 3 years, two years. They couldn't handle her, so they sent her off to school. And they were getting their act together, and they wanted to bring the child home, and he had a legal-sized sheet of paper, both sides, with rules and the new regime that it was going to be like. He and his wife sat down with me in the office and said, "We want your opinion of this particular thing we're going to do with her on the way from the airport home. We're going to read these things to her." I said, "You want my opinion?" "Right." So I tore up their sheet of paper, stuck it in a waste paper can. I never will forget him. He was a very kind man, very quiet. He said, You don't think much of it, huh?" He said, what do you think we should do?" I said, "You start with transparency. You start by telling where you messed up." The wife said, "You don't know our kid. She's a brat." I said, "I know, I've heard. But I mean, she is uncontrollable." "I know, the rumor's out." "I mean, she is horrible. I know that. I understand that. But where did you blow it?" "Well, where did you blow it?" Took us an hour to finally get a new list down. That's what they were to share first, where we blew it. Everybody knows they blew it. Where did you blow it? That's the hidden missing link. Secondly, go to intimacy. If you've got a broken relationship with your child, go back to intimacy. And here you express to your child, "Look, I love you more than anybody else in this whole world. I love you. I'm on your team. As your parent, I'm on your team. We disagree over a lot of things. We have our troubles. But I am on your team, and no one will ever be on your team more than I am. Never. I don't care if you're sitting in jail. I'm still relating to you because I love you." That's intimacy. I never understood how strong that was until I lost both of my parents, realizing that I had two people who were on my team more than anybody else in the world. even from time to time yet, I feel like I want to pick up the phone and call one of them and tell them what happened, because I'm so excited to share it with them. They were my team members. You are your children's greatest team members. Tell them that. Third step, the prodigal son approach. You can't do anything else. You turn it over to God. Transparency, where did you blow it? Secondly, intimacy. I love you. I'm on your team. No matter what you do, no matter what you say, I'm still going to love you. I'm going to love you responsibly, but I'm going to love you. And then the prodigal son approach. You turn everything over to God. It's amazing what happens in opening that whole relationship up. Life is a series of responsibilities lived out in the context of relationships. And you are the primary relationship link to life for your child. You are the primary relationship link to life for your child. As a matter of fact, in many cases, you are the primary link to God for your child. And everything that you are represents what God is all about. That's why we use the term God our Father. And if you're not too swift and thinking that your father's too swift, it's very difficult to understand what God the Father is all about. Everything that you're all about is a primary link of a relationship to life for your child. Life is a series of responsibilities lived out in the context of relationships. And you are the primary source of life, the primary relationship link to your child. Do you love your child? You can blow it in discipline. You can make mistakes in all kinds of ways in directing your child, but if you don't have a relationship with them, everything else falls apart. You can blow in all kinds of ways in discipline and still have a relationship with them, and you're still going to win. You got to have a relationship with your child. Fathers, parents, don't provoke your children to anger, but bring them up with a relationship and responsibility grounded in the reality of the Word of God. Are you relating to your child? Do you love your child? Does your child know that?